Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Odessa American, Thursday, August 4th, 2022, Local News Roundup. Man accused of grabbing Odessa girl. A San Antonio man was arrested early Saturday morning after an 8-year-old girl told police a man who was naked from the waist down walked into her house and grabbed her by the waist. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a Don Avenue resident called 911 around 1:30 a.m. Saturday to say a half-nude man had tried to touch her cousin and family members were detaining him in their front yard. When officers arrived, they found Jarwin Agus, 32, being held down on the north side of the house, wearing only a black shirt. According to the report, officers repeatedly asked Agus where he lived, and he kept replying, 167-704-220. Witnesses told officers Agus walked through their front yard, opened their storm door and then their front door, and started disrobing. The report stated, once down to his T-shirt, they said Agus saw the young girl and grabbed her by the waist, but she was able to pull away and ran outside to tell her parents what had happened. A group of adults outside rushed inside and chased Agus outside and took him to the ground, according to the report. While officers were still at the home, Agus's fiancé arrived, said he was highly intoxicated and had walked into another residence without permission before. Agus was arrested on suspicion of burglary of a habitation with the intent to commit another felony, indecency with a child, and public intoxication. He was released Sunday after posting a $75,000 surety bond. Woman, teens, accused of assault. An Odessa woman and two teenagers were arrested Sunday after three other people, including a pregnant woman, told officers they assaulted them. According to an Odessa Police Department report, someone called 911 around 10 p.m. Sunday to say 8 to 10 people were fighting in the 7300 block of West Pyle Ranch Road and a pregnant woman needed an ambulance. When officers arrived, they found a 27-year-old pregnant woman on her hands and knees crying and holding her stomach. She was taken to the hospital. Another woman on the scene told officers she'd been assaulted by her former son-in-law's family over child custody issues, the report stated. An officer noted in his report that the 37-year-old had scrapes on her elbow and knee, a scratch to her neck, and multiple injuries to her face. The woman's brother, 21, told officers he'd been punched in the face during the event and he saw the assaults on his sister and the pregnant woman. Officers obtained video footage of the incident and found all three suspects at a home in the 7300 block of Fossil Ranch Road. Bianca Renee Pineda, 44, was arrested on suspicion of two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity and one count of simple assault. She was released from the Ector County Jail Monday after posting surety bonds totaling $45,386. Her daughter, Janelle Reze Pineda, 17, was arrested on suspicion of two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity, and she, too, was released Monday after posting $34,000 in surety bonds. A 16-year-old girl was also arrested on suspicion of two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity. Game room employees arrested this week. Two employees of the East Odessa Game Room were arrested Tuesday after police said they paid an undercover Odessa Police Department officer in cash. Tuan Minh Nguyen, 46, of Fort Worth, and Thuc Vien Ho, 43, of San Diego, were arrested on suspicion of engaging in organized criminal activity. According to an OPD report, undercover detectives went into the business to gamble, and once they won, they told Nguyen, and Nguyen told Ho. Ho then paid an officer $65 in cash. Under Texas law, game rooms are only supposed to award customers prizes and prizes valued at no more than $5. The report indicates the detectives also seized gaming machine parts, a DVR system, documents, and an unknown amount of cash. Undercover OPD officers seized more than $33,000 from the Maroon Game Room following an undercover operation last month. Ector County District Court documents show an undercover detective went into the Maroon Game Room on June 22nd, played a slot machine, received 5,790 credits, and was paid $55 by an employee. Detectives also observed two employees paying cash to other customers. According to court records, undercover OPD officers were also provided cash instead of prizes during operations at a handful of game rooms in December 2019, March 2021, and May 2021. Those operations resulted in the seizure of more than $125,000. There are 28 game rooms operating within the city limits and 35 within unincorporated Ector County. As of Wednesday afternoon, Nguyen and Ho remained in the Ector County Jail. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has also placed a hold on Ho. Woman accused of assaulting another detention officer. A 22-year-old Odessa woman, who authorities say has a history of assaulting Ector County detention officers, is now accused of attacking another one. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, the officer told investigators she was escorting Mia Nygaard down a hallway at the jail on July 28th when Nygaard hit her on the back of her head, causing her pain and knocking her out. Surveillance video showed Nygaard hitting the officer multiple times in the face with both of her fists, according to the report. Nygaard also admitted to the assault, saying, "I intended on harming her," the report stated. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths says the detention officer did not lose consciousness, but did have to sit down after the altercation. She was checked out by jail nurses and able to return to duty. According to online court documents, Nygaard is facing trial on three counts of assaulting a public servant in connection with two separate incidences at the jail. On May 5, 2021, a detention officer said Nygaard struck her in the head, and another detention officer accused her of pulling her to the ground by the neck. A third officer accused Nygaard of hitting her in the head on May 31, 2021. Nygaard is also facing a harassment charge because another woman accused her of spitting at her on May 5, 2021. Jail records show at the time of the alleged incidents, Nygaard had been picked up on warrants charging her with failure to appear in court in a criminal mischief and family violence assault case.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with local articles from the Odessa American, published Thursday, August 4th, 2022. Texas economists say recession unlikely, booming job market and high energy demand cited, by Bob Campbell. There's a lot of national alarmism about the prospect of a recession, but economists Ray Perryman and Carr Ingham are not buying it, acknowledging that the economy has shown the classic symptoms of two straight quarters with drops in the gross domestic product. They say continued strong job growth and a powerful worldwide need for oil and gas are belying the naysayers. The economy is clearly facing strong headwinds, but at least at this point, it does not appear to be headed to more than a very mild recession, if one at all, said Perryman, an Odessan who works in Waco. Many people use the rule of thumb of two straight quarters of GDP decline, which we've had, but that can be deceptive. In the first quarter, the decline was due to a rise in imports, which subtracts from GDP in national income accounting. What that basically means is that we were unloading more ships and getting goods into the supply chain. The second quarter was a bit more problematic, but some key areas, such as consumer spending, remain relatively strong. Underneath all that, recessionary economies don't gain over 10,000 jobs a day. I think that may well slow down some, but I doubt that it becomes negative for any sustained period. GDP is the total sales of all goods and services in the nation, which in the last quarter amounted to $24.85 trillion. Perryman said inflation, supply chain disruptions, and the virtual lockdown of the Chinese economy are all notable challenges. But given the ongoing demand for petroleum products, enhancements to capacity, and rapidly rising demand for natural gas globally, I do not expect the energy sector to be particularly affected by any slowdown at this point. Rig counts are on a decidedly upward trajectory, and capital seems to be flowing into drilling and production. There are longer-term concerns, such as government policy that is at odds with the economic reality. But I don't think the current state of economy or its path over the next year or so are going to notably impact the current path of oil and gas activity. Ingham, a petroleum economist for the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, who works in Amarillo, said the GDP's 6.9% increase in the fourth quarter of 2021 preceded decreases of 1.6% in the first quarter this year and 0.9% in the second. If we are in a recession right now, it's one of the more interesting events I've ever seen, because recessions are virtually always characterized not just by a decline in the GDP, but also by other measures of economic activity, most notably employment and general spending, Ingham said. Right now, we have really stout employment growth nationally, and we still have growth in consumer spending activity with retail sales. A deep recession would be characterized by jobs lost, a spending decline, and quite possibly a decline in energy demand. So, I don't have the feeling that we are headed for one. When was the last time you saw a recession with 4% employment growth? He asked. It doesn't make sense. These two things have to be resolved at some future point, because we can't have GDP and employment moving in different directions for any sustained period of time. There is a demand for those workers, which belies the notion of a recession. Ingham said inflation is clearly having a lot to do with this, with the federal government's overspending and the U.S. economy's continuing attempt to disentangle itself from COVID. Now the Biden administration is talking about spending another $700 to $800 billion, which is anything but inflation reduction, Ingham said. That's totally overdoing it, but we just keep doing it. It's pouring more gasoline on the fire. Noting that America's last two recessions were 2020's COVID-related one and the very hurtful one of 2008 and 2009, he said a recession would affect the oil field with less demand for energy. Asked if the momentum would be taken away from the Texas oil and gas business by a worldwide recession, Ingham said, "We would be caught up in that because everything is interconnected in the global economy. But we might be buffered a little because we run our economy in a different and better way with our markets. We'll be better off as long as our economy is left to respond to market outcomes and is open to trade from the rest of the world." Odessan suing local hair salon, by Kim Smith. An Odessa man has filed a lawsuit against Smart Style Family Hair Salon, claiming he was injured by a stylist using clippers 2 years ago. According to the lawsuit, filed Tuesday in Ector County District Court, Gerardo Castro Jr. went to the salon inside Walmart on John Ben Shepherd Parkway on August 3, 2020 for a haircut. Defendant Thanaporn Kajornpu was in the process of cutting the plaintiff's hair when suddenly and without warning, defendant Thanaporn Kajornpu broke the skin of plaintiff's head with clippers that were not sanitized correctly, the lawsuit stated. Castro is suing Kajornpu, her supervisor, Raquel O. Flores, and the salon's parent companies, Requis LLC and Regis Corporation. The lawsuit, which was filed by Castro's attorney, Loncar Lyon Jenkins of Lubbock, states that because of the defendant's gross negligence, Castro sustained several personal injuries to his head and his body in general. The plaintiff's attorney also alleges Castro has suffered great physical and mental pain, suffering and anguish, loss of earning capacity, physical disfigurement, and physical impairment. Castro is seeking in excess of $1 million. Amy Walker, the general manager for Requis, said she wasn't interested in making a comment. A message left for Regis was not immediately returned, and a stylist at the salon said she was too busy to speak with the reporter or take a phone number. OA Board approves budget. The Odessa College Board of Trustees approved an overall budget of $75,241,515 during their meeting Tuesday. The tax rate will be approved in September. Chief Financial Officer Brandy Hamm said the budget priorities are to maintain a competitive salary environment, support the OC 10,000 enrollment objective, strategic investments into student success strategies, and completions of the ongoing construction projects. New initiatives in the budget include a mental telehealth software, a 20-foot standard shipping container for the Occupational Safety and Environmental Technology Program, chat platform licensing, and food pantry vouchers. Hamm said the budget includes a 6% salary increase for eligible full-time faculty, professional, and classified staff. Hamm said the college will be increasing full-time staff by 23 positions. The current budget reflects 422 positions. The budget will be supported by income received from taxes and tuition and fees, Hamm said. Board Chairman Gary Johnson said the tax rate would probably be adopted in September. The current tax rate is 0.201723 cents per 100 valuation, with a maintenance and operation rate of 0.172599 cents per $100 valuation, and a debt service rate of 0.029124 cents per $100 valuation. We're looking at, in order to support the budget, a tax rate of 0.164191 per $100 valuation and debt service rate of 0.025693 per $100 valuation for a total tax rate of 0.189884 per $100 valuation. Hamm said the debt service rate could change. Johnson said the average home value this year is $184,000. Last year it was $173,000, an increase of about $10,000. With the increase in appraisal, he said most of the rise was in minerals and commercial property. If we do adopt this tax rate later on, then the average homeowner increase on a $183,000 home would be 16 cents per year. The board also accepted the resignation of Place 4 trustee J.E. Coach Presley. In a letter to the board, Presley said he had served on the panel since May 2002. He was a baseball coach at OC from 1965 to 1972 and also at Odessa High School. He received a standing ovation from those in attendance, though he was not there. Johnson said hopefully within the next couple of weeks, the board will consider recommendations for filling the spots of Presley and Larry Johnson. He said they would try to do something in Presley's honor as well. Vice President for Instruction Tremaine Anderson gave an update on bachelor degrees. For people 25 and older, according to the 2020 census, Ector County's attainment was 16.1%. The state was 30.7% and the United States 32.9%. Under House Bill 3348, community colleges can offer up to 5 bachelor's degrees. By 2023, OC's first class of students will start the BAS, Bachelor of Applied Science, in early childhood education. At that point, Anderson said, OC will offer 3 bachelor's degrees. She added that there are 18 full and part-time faculty in leadership and management and automation. Looking at the past 3 years, students are 49% female and 51% male, Anderson said. 66% of students are full-time and 34% are part-time, she said. Unduplicated enrollment from 2019 to 22 was 458, and there were 141 graduates from 2020 to 2022. Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness Janice Hicks said OC enrollment continues to buck the trend with increasing enrollment as opposed to the decline seen nationwide. Hicks said 60% of occupations moving forward require some type of credential. That's what we're doing with the bachelor's degrees that Dr. Anderson just talked about, Hicks said. In spring 2022, OC saw enrollment of 7,721 students, an increase of 21%, she said. There were 6,395 in 2021. Over a five-year period, she said OC spring enrollment has increased by 34%. Spring 2022 outcomes show a 97% completion rate, with 83% earning an A, B, or C grade, and 3% of students dropped courses. In 2021, 1,200 students were awarded degrees and 1,260 in 2022. This summer, enrollment increased by 3% to 3,017, Hicks said. Vice President of Administrative Services, Ken Zartner, gave an update on Vision 2030 Plus, and President Gregory Williams gave a report that included OC's reaffirmation of accreditation from the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges that is good for 10 years.
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022. Springboard Center announces new executive director. The board of directors of the Springboard Center, the Permian Basin's premier alcohol and drug treatment and recovery center, is pleased to announce the appointment of David C. Chancellor of Midland as its executive director. Chancellor was most recently vice president of human resources for the Medical Center Health System in Odessa. Before MCHS, he served for 12 years as the executive director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, where he led the growth and positive impact of the clubs on the children of the Permian Basin. Chancellor was a Lutheran pastor for 13 years in Houston, Lufkin, and Kerrville, where he interacted with the AA community and people battling addiction and those in recovery. He served with distinction in the U.S. Army for 8 years, ending his career as a captain in military intelligence. Chancellor was raised in Odessa and is a graduate of the University of Texas at Austin and earned a master's degree from the Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. He has additional postgraduate training in executive leadership from the University of Michigan and the Harvard Business School. The Springboard Center is located at 200 Corporate Drive, and its phone number is 432-620-0255. It provides high-quality treatment through a continuum of care and recovery for adults struggling with addiction to alcohol and drugs. The center's clinicians and alumni help connect clients with the recovery community to support their ongoing sobriety after completing our programs. What is lung cancer screening? Who needs it? Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths in the U.S., according to the American Cancer Society. Lung cancer claims more lives each year than colon, breast, and prostate cancers combined. Although the disease can occur in people who have never smoked, people who smoke or have smoked have the greatest risk of lung cancer. The risk of lung cancer increases with the length of time and number of cigarettes you've smoked. If you quit smoking, even after smoking for many years, you can significantly reduce your chances of developing lung cancer. Lung cancer screening is a low-dose CT scan of the lungs to look for lung cancer. The procedure is used to detect the presence of lung cancer in otherwise healthy people with a high risk of lung cancer. By the time lung cancer signs and symptoms develop, the cancer is usually too advanced to be cured. The goal of lung cancer screening is to detect lung cancer at an early stage, when it's more likely to be cured. Lung cancer screening is recommended for older adults who are longtime smokers and who don't have any signs or symptoms of lung cancer. How the heat affects the medication you take. Finding ways to keep your body cool during extremely high temperatures is important, and so is ensuring your medications aren't exposed to extreme heat. Scott Hall, a Mayo Clinic pharmacist, says medications can become degraded during temperature changes. He says some medications also can cause heat intolerance. Temperature can impact any medication a person is taking, but some are more prone to problems than others. Quote, insulin is definitely going to be one of those medications. So patients with diabetes should try to not store their insulin in a place where the temperature will get too high, end quote, says Hall. Store your medications in a cool, dry place. If you keep them in a bathroom where you shower, leave the medicine in the original container. Quote, keeping it in those bottles where they can remain sealed is really going to help prevent any negative effects of heat, end quote. Some medicines can cause heat intolerance. blood pressure medications, antihistamines, decongestants, and psychiatric medications. If you have questions about your medication, it's important to ask, says Hall. Quote, if you have questions about your medications and how you should store them, or how they could affect you in the heat, that's a great time to talk with your pharmacist, end quote, says Hall. Quote, they can provide that information that you need to really understand what the possibilities are, end quote. 1 in 4 pregnancies may end in miscarriage. Among women who know they are pregnant, up to 25% of those pregnancies will end in a miscarriage, according to the National Library of Medicine. That percentage is at the top of the institution's estimated number of knowingly pregnant women who will have a miscarriage, 10% to 25%. But health experts say the total number of miscarriages is probably much higher because many, perhaps most, miscarriages occur early in a pregnancy, usually before a person knows they are pregnant. As many as 50% of all pregnancies may end in miscarriage, according to the March of Dimes, an Arlington, Virginia-based nonprofit group focused on improving the health of mothers and babies. The term miscarriage refers to the unexpected loss of a fetus before the 20th week of pregnancy and is considered a naturally occurring event. From the 20th week on, loss of the baby is identified as a stillbirth. Most miscarriages occur because the fetus is not developing normally. This can be the result of the fetus having too many or too few chromosomes, which are the cell structures that hold genes, the National Institutes of Health says. Chromosomal abnormality is usually a chance occurrence, happening as the embryo divides and grows, rather than something that is passed from parent to child through genetics. About 50% of miscarriages are linked to extra or missing chromosomes, according to the Mayo Clinic. Other possible contributing factors include such things as drug or alcohol abuse, exposure to environmental toxins, uncontrolled diabetes, and smoking. But healthcare providers often cannot determine what caused a miscarriage. The risk of having a miscarriage, however, increases with a woman's age, becoming highest after age 40. Ways to calm your recession anxiety. The potential for a recession has spurred anxiety in people across the country. A Baylor College of Medicine expert offers tips on how to manage these feelings. Quote, there has been a 50% increase in anxiety over the last couple of years, and finances are a major contribution to that, end quote, said Dr. Asim Shah, professor and executive vice chair in the Menninger Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Baylor. Meet with a financial advisor. People who are retiring in the next few years are likely anxious about finances ahead of a possible recession. Shaw suggests meeting with a financial advisor who can talk you through your situation. Relax and distract yourself. If you feel anxious and overwhelmed, incorporate relaxation techniques such as exercising, walking, or taking deep breaths. Everyone relaxes differently, so do what works best for you. Distract yourself from the anxiety by focusing on something positive. Do activities you enjoy and spend time with people you love and trust. Know your triggers. You alone cannot control the national recession, even if you have the best financial advisor. If you feel on edge, understand your triggers. Avoid looking at your 401k or financial plans excessively if it exacerbates anxiety. Shop with cash, pay bills on time. People tend to spend more when shopping with a credit card instead of cash. With cash, you have a set amount to spend and you won't make excess purchases. Quote, studies show that shopping with cash is less stressful because you don't spend extra, end quote, Shaw said. Pay your bills on time and do not let them pile up to prevent additional anxiety. Revise vacation plans. Instead of taking extravagant vacations, plan smart, short vacations nearby. You can visit a nearby beach or city with family and friends. You don't have to go too far to enjoy time away. Taking even a short amount of time away from your usual routine can help reduce anxiety and help you reset. Have a plan. Planning reduces anxiety and gives peace of mind. Planning expenses ahead of time can positively impact your mental well-being, reduce anxiety and stress, improve sleep. If you experience unbearable anxiety, Shaw suggests speaking with a mental health specialist. Mayo Clinic Q&A, hydration in the summer. Dear Mayo Clinic, I am prone to kidney stones, so I know it's important for me to stay hydrated while I exercise. But do I need to change what I drink in the summer? A friend mentioned that I might be better with a sports drink versus water. I'm also wondering how much I should drink. Can you provide any advice? Answer. Staying hydrated during exercise is important. You can become dehydrated if you take in too little fluid, especially during the hot summer months. Conversely, consuming too much fluid can be problematic. Some people are known to exercise what is known as exercise-induced low sodium, or hyponatremia. Finding a balance is important. The purpose of drinking fluid, whether water or electrolyte-containing beverages, is to rehydrate the body and put fluid back into your system so your organs can function properly. How much to drink and when depends on your situation. Generally, it's recommended that you should consume at least 2 liters of water or other beverages per day. The general rule of thumb among healthcare professionals is to drink to thirst, although guidelines speak to hydration before, during, and after exercise. I always tell people to look and listen to your body as the best indicator when you need hydration. That said, thirst isn't always a helpful indicator of hydration status, particularly when exercising. If you're exercising and thirsty, you are already well on your way to becoming dehydrated, compared to if you were resting and thirsty. You will need to take in more fluid than usual at times. During the summer months, for instance, when weather is hotter and more humid, it is important to drink more fluid, especially if you are exercising outdoors. As far as what to drink, for most people, water is the best place to start. Depending on how extensively you exercise, having a beverage that includes electrolytes also is important to replace nutrients and electrolytes lost during sweating, such as sodium and chloride. Sodium is important because it helps you absorb glucose and water. Aim for about 450 milligrams of sodium per 24 ounces of sports drink. Avoid salt tablets as they do not include all the electrolytes you need, and you can easily use too much. You also can look for a drink with some carbohydrates, since they provide fuel for your working muscles. It is best to consume about half your fluid intake in water and half in a beverage that contains electrolytes. Mind the amount of sugar intake, though. While sugar is important, especially for endurance athletes, too much sugar can cause gastrointestinal issues, including bloating, cramping, or diarrhea. One recommendation is to keep sugar below 30 grams per 24 ounces of a sports drink. The best rule of thumb is when you exercise, drink to thirst, and hydrate your body with plain water and, as needed, a sports beverage. In the summer, also be mindful about how you feel as you exercise. I find that many people do not drink enough water daily, so they may feel better after increasing hydration, no matter the source. In addition, avoid drinking alcohol when you are outdoors because alcohol is a diuretic. This means alcohol will cause your body to lose water, leading to dehydration much faster. As you spend time outdoors, be aware of symptoms of dehydration, which can include extreme thirst, less frequent urination, dark-colored urine, fatigue, dizziness, confusion. The U.S. rate of C-section births continues to climb. Births by cesarean section increased to about 32% of all U.S. births last year, continuing what has been a small but steady increase for much of the past 25 years, according to a new report from the National Center for Health Statistics, which is part of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The center's findings are based on data from birth certificates registered in all 50 states and D.C. through 2021. It found that the overall rise in C-section births was driven by an increase in the number of first-time, known as primary, cesareans across all ages and racial groups. Today, about 3 out of 5 women who have a cesarean delivery have not given birth by cesarean before, yet the number of repeat C-sections has decreased somewhat over the past 5 years. In a cesarean birth, the baby is delivered through incisions in the mother's abdomen and uterus. Sometimes C-sections are planned, other times the procedure is used when problems develop during delivery that endanger the health of the mother, the baby, or both. Having a C-section does not preclude having a vaginal birth in the future, but most women who give birth for the first time via C-section, more than 4 in 5, according to the CDC report, will also have cesarean delivery for subsequent births. Because of this, the agency predicts that, quote, the overall cesarean delivery rate is likely to continue to increase, end quote. Why your sunscreen isn't working? Julian Sass is a sunscreen educator to his nearly 20,000 followers on Instagram, and every time he posts a sunscreen review via a 90-second reel, he applies approximately 1/2 teaspoon, 2.14 grams, of sunscreen. The most frequent viewer question he gets, why are you using so much? Skin cancer is the most common form of cancer in the United States. Nearly 100,000 people in the United States are expected to be diagnosed with melanoma this year. And sunscreen has been shown to help prevent early signs of aging and damage that can lead to skin cancer. Evidence shows that people tend to use less than half of the recommended amount of sunscreen. One sunscreen application doesn't give you, quote, carte blanche to go sit in the sun for 8 hours, end quote, said Jennifer Lynn, a dermatologist and co-director of the Melanoma Risk and Prevention Clinic at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. The American Academy of Dermatology recommends reapplying sunscreen of at least 30 SPF every 2 hours outdoors, although Lynn said it could be more often if you spend prolonged time outdoors.
Hello, this is Michael, and as part of this special extended full second hour of Thursday's newspapers today, I'll be reading a few local sports articles. One note, all of these articles are coming from the Midland Reporter Telegram. These articles are related to high school football. There were no such articles published in the Odessa American the past few days, but if history is any guidance, I suspect we will be seeing some Odessa American written stories regarding local football, and we will read those as well. We'll start this first article from the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekender, Saturday, July 30th. Commentary: Anxiously Awaiting the Start of Football Season, by Oscar Leroy. The anticipation is growing and there is excitement brewing about another high school football season starting up. While baseball and other sports are great, when it comes to West Texas, we all know that football is king. In just a few days, our area high school football teams will hit the field in preparation for the season, which officially begins the last full week of August. And just like the Reporter Telegram has done in the past, we will be working hard on producing previews for each of our teams in our coverage area. And after a two-year absence because of the pandemic, we will once again produce a football preview section, keeping fingers crossed, on the 2022 season. There will be new coaches and some new districts this year, and there should be some teams to watch. Probably the biggest change comes at Midland Christian, as Chris Cunningham comes from Plano Prestonwood to lead a strong Mustang program. That looks to continue the momentum from last year's great run in their last year in TAPS Division I. It will be strange not seeing Greg McClendon running around the sidelines after more than two decades, but he left the program in a great place with seven TAPS state titles. Cunningham has had plenty of success himself as a coach, and it appears that he will only add to the tradition. It will also be odd not seeing Greenwood play some of the schools they normally have, such as Monahans and Pecos. After February's UIL realignment, the Rangers were sent out east to District 3-4 Division 2 and playing teams such as Wichita Falls, Hershey, and Graham. But maybe playing teams like that will help the Rangers in the playoffs. By all indications, this could be a pretty good Greenwood team if everything falls into place for the Rangers. District 2-6A has a new look with Abilene High dropping down a classification, but it will still have Legacy, Midland High, Odessa Permian, Odessa High, San Angelo Central, and Wolforth Friendship. It still could be a salty league if MHS, OHS, and Friendship continue to make strides. The LHS Rebels could once again be a team to watch, especially with quarterback Marcus Davila continuing to rack up the college offers, including one from Texas Tech. Also expect Andrews and Garden City among the area teams to make some noise this year. Tom Harvey was promoted from defensive coordinator to head coach after Ralph Mason retired in Andrews, but the Mustangs will continue to have high expectations with some key players coming back, such as district MVP and linebacker Luis Cervantes and productive quarterback E.J. Lopez. Garden City will continue to be among the top teams in six-man Division I, with the majority of their starters coming back, although it won't be easy making the playoffs in a nasty District 7 with Rankin, Borden County, Grady, and Sands. Only two teams out of the district make it into the playoffs, so you can bet that those teams will have earned their way. As always, I look forward to Howard County rivals Cahoma and Forsan kicking things off with the Howard County Bowl August 25th in Big Spring. Can Forsan build on last year's success? Can Kahoma bounce back after last year's tough season and get back to the playoffs? Many questions should soon be answered the closer we get to the start of the season. But before things really kick into high gear, let's wish the best of luck to the players and coaches who will be working hard under the hot August sun over the next few weeks. Permian Basin fans will be anxiously waiting to see what you guys will put forth this season. Legacy Looks to Figure Out Lineup in 2-a-Days by Christopher Hadorn. The Legacy football team will begin its quest for a fifth straight district title and a sixth consecutive playoff berth when it begins 2-a-Days Monday. The Rebels will take the field first from 6 to 8 a.m. and cap off the day with a session from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Team 62 is anchored by a future Division I football player on both sides of the ball, with highly touted junior Marcos Davila at quarterback and University of Arizona commit Canyon Moses as defensive back. LHS also has 2 3-year starters, anchoring both the offensive and defensive lines, with senior left offensive tackle Jervis Bobie and senior defensive end Chase Barton, both of whom have been voted team captains by their teammates. However, the Rebels will have plenty of fresh faces with 9 projected new starters on offense. The skill positions lost quite a bit of production with the graduations of New Mexico State freshman running back McKaylin Young, wide receiver and Tulane signee Christopher Brazell, and running back wide receiver and Angelo State signee Donnie Bishop from their 2021 team that finished 10-2 and lost in the area rounds of the playoffs. LHS head coach Clint Hartman says each preseason his coaching staff gets different colors of Play-Doh with a new group of players, and they have to figure out which positions, offense or defense, where they fit best. It's hard to win games, and we're going to do every darn thing we can to win those games, Hartman said. I like the challenge of every year getting those 6 or 7 or 8 different colors of Play-Doh and figuring out what this football team is really going to be. From the second year, when we rushed for 4,000-plus yards, to the years when we threw for a whole bunch of yards. What will this be? We're going to figure out who can take it to the land of 6 points on offense and get on the ball. We're going to figure out who can play steady and execute defensively and earn playing time. The most noticeable change Rebel fans will see will be in the change of defensive scheme from primarily a 3-4 alignment to a 4-2-5. Hartman also calls it a split defense. With prior defensive coordinator Floyd White taking the head coaching job at Odessa Compass Academy, previous offensive coordinator Frank Maldonado moved across the line of scrimmage to assume defensive coordinator duties. Maldonado was Hartman's defensive coordinator from 2008 to 2013 at League City Clear Springs. I totally have trust that we will play great defense, Hartman said. Wherever we've been, we played great defense with him as our defensive coordinator. When he was our offensive coordinator, we played great offense. On offense, LHS figures to have a high-powered passing attack with Davila behind center. Davila, who holds 15 offers from Division I programs, threw for 2,731 yards and 27 TDs last season. One obvious question is, how will the Rebels make up for Young's production on the ground after he rushed for 2,177 yards and 36 touchdowns? LHS plans to utilize 3 different running backs, with seniors Esquiel Luna and Nathaniel Brito and junior Madden Malloy. Luna missed the entire 2021 season with an injury, while Brito transferred from Midland Christian after rushing for 826 yards and 6 TDs last year. Is he going to be hard to replace? There's no doubt, Hartman said of Young. Good players always are, but I expect good things from those 3 backs. LHS will have another glaring hole at linebacker following the graduation of Texas Tech walk-on Wesley Smith, 133 tackles. But Hartman is excited about the team's depth on both the defensive line and secondary. The Rebels have experience in the secondary with seniors Mario Serrano and Jamar Robertson and junior Damian Johnson complementing Moses. Hartman believes Johnson can be as good as Moses. He's really, really fast, Hartman said. He's a great football player. I expect nothing but special things from him. I think he'll be a top-rated defensive back in the country as a junior. And this article is from Tuesday, August the 2nd, Midland Reporter Telegram Sports. Area teams enjoy first day of practices, by Oscar Leroy and Christopher Hattern. Monday was like Christmas in August for area high school football teams, as it was the first day that programs, which didn't do spring training, could start practicing for the upcoming season. From the big schools in Class 6A to the small private schools, players and coaches were up at the crack of dawn or up late last night working out. With temperatures hovering near 100 degrees for the highs around the Permian Basin, the goal for most teams was to avoid most of the heat. In the case of Kahoma, the Bulldogs hit the field at Bill Easterling Memorial Stadium at 12:01 a.m. Monday morning for their first practice. Over at J.M. King Memorial Stadium, Greenwood had their first practice on Monday morning, as the Rangers have high expectations going into the season with plenty of experience returning off a 5-5 playoff team. "It was good," said Greenwood coach Rusty Purser about the first day. "We're missing some of our sophomore class, as some of them were not here this morning. But overall, we had over 100 kids here and probably expecting a little bit more. We're probably missing about 15 or so kids. But outside of that, varsity-wise, they were all here and really looking good today. They not only have shown the maturity, but the work ethic. The work that those kids have had through the offseason and through the summer really paid off for us today, for sure." Greenwood senior linebacker Jimmy Vasquez liked what he saw from the Rangers on Monday. "The first day of practice went great," he said. "We had some pretty good attendance. On varsity, we might be missing a guy or two, but other than that, we have everyone we need right now." Trinity practiced inside Beale Gymnasium during their morning workout, but then went outside to Coombs Field for their afternoon practice. The Chargers are coming off a 6-4 season with a playoff appearance, despite having a very young squad. Senior back and defensive lineman Monty Campbell believes the team will pick up where it left off last season and continue to make strides. "Practice went really well," Campbell said. "The younger guys look pretty good. They definitely worked out over the summer. As far as I could tell, they look stronger and well-conditioned." The first week will consist mostly of non-contact drills and conditioning before being allowed to put on pads and have contact by the second week. Those schools that went through spring training won't start practicing until next Monday. The Legacy football team christened its new artificial turf field at Rebel Field Monday with the start of two-a-day practices. The Rebels, coming off a 10-2 season and their fourth straight district title, unveiled their 4-2-5 defensive scheme, which was installed by head coach Clint Hartman and defensive coordinator Frank Maldonado this offseason. Maldonado, LHS's offensive coordinator for the last six seasons, assumed the defensive coordinator role when Floyd White took the head coaching job at Compass Academy in Odessa. The Rebels are expected to utilize three running backs this season, with seniors Ezekiel Luna and Nathaniel Brito and junior Madden Malloy, after New Mexico State freshman Michaelian Young rushed for 2,177 yards last year. "To me, as coach and a person, it's like Christmas Day. You get to open your gifts and see what they look like," Hartman said of the first day of practice. "But I think we're way ahead of where we thought. Today, the offensive line and the three running backs, they all did good things. Defensively, I thought we ran around well, but we got a little tired. When they're not tired, both sides of the ball played really, really well." In the first team offense versus first team defense session, junior quarterback Marcos Davila rifled a bullet from about 30 yards out to Jonathan Esparza for a touchdown pass. Davila threw for 2,731 yards and 27 TDs in his first year, starting at the varsity level last year. "Marcos, as you would expect, looked better as a junior," Hartman said. Hartman was impressed by his veteran trio in the secondary that includes University of Arizona commit Kenyon Moses, senior Mario Serrano, and junior Damian Johnson. Other players that left an impression on Hartman were junior wide receiver Colin Brazell, junior slot receiver Tristan Camacho, senior left offensive tackle Javaris Bobby, and senior defensive lineman Chase Barton. And now here's an article published from the Midland Reporter-Telegram sports section, Wednesday, August 3rd. Andrews Motivated to Have Strong Year by Oscar LeRoy. The Andrews football team went through more adversity than probably any team in West Texas last year. The Mustangs dealt with a ton of injuries, inconsistent play, and they also tried to help their community heal following a tragic and fatal bus accident involving the school's band. While it was a lot to deal with in one season, the returning players may have come out of that hungrier than ever before, or to have an outstanding season in 2022. The expectations are as high as they have ever been, with a majority of starters returning from last year's team and a strong senior class leading the way. Those reasons are why the Mustangs and first-year head coach Tom Harvey feel good about improving last year's 5-7 overall record. "We have our sights on a district championship first, but this is a special group," said Harvey, who was promoted from defensive coordinator after Ralph Mason announced his retirement at the end of last season. "In this town, they have been talking about this group since they were younger, because growing up, they have won in football, and they have won in basketball. They won in baseball. And then they got to junior high, and then they won in football, basketball, and track. And in summer baseball, they never lost. Now they're seniors, and it's going to be a fun year." Added senior linebacker and running back Luis Cervantes, "I'm extremely excited, extremely pumped up, with a dog mentality to get after it. We had a few heartbreaking losses last year. We're going to try to get those back." The Mustangs were plagued with a lot of injuries early on as they lost their first three games of the season and at one point were 2-6. But the Mustangs rebounded to win the last two regular season games to claim a share of the District 2-4A Division 1 title. Andrews also handily won its first playoff game before tragedy struck before its area round playoff game against Springtown. A bus carrying the members of the school's band was involved in a head-on collision with a pickup truck going the wrong way on Interstate 20 as the bus was heading to the playoff game in Sweetwater. The accident claimed three lives, including AHS band director Darren Johns and bus driver team statistician Mark Boswell, and some students were also injured. Harvey said the team was in the locker room about an hour before the game when news started to trickle in about the accident and everybody became very concerned. The game was eventually postponed and was played 2 days later. When they did play, it was easy to see that the Mustangs were extremely motivated and were in a tight game until Springtown pulled away late for a 43-33 victory. "They poured their hearts into winning that game," Harvey said. "Somehow they felt like they let the community down, and that's the furthest thing from it. You saw them come together by carrying that loss and carrying the injured kids into that game." Cervantes said, "After going through that, the team got even closer and a lot of positives came out of dealing with adversity. We trusted more on each other," he said. "It taught us to cherish every moment and to bring out the best every time we practice." What Harvey has seen from this team and in the way that they care about the community has him feeling good about what his team can do this season. "A town that was close anyway. It means the world for guys like Luis to be an Andrews Mustang. They thought about that when they played against Springtown, and that's the way they were raised," Harvey said. "This is a special place to go to school. This is a special place to grow up. More than anything, this is a great group of kids." And for our final sports story, this is from today's Midland Reporter Telegram, Thursday, August 4th. Forsan leaning on lines to build off 10-2 season by Christopher Hattern. The Forsan football team was only a few plays away from being unbeaten in its 12 games played last season. The Buffaloes, 10-2, 4-1 in district, fell 3 points short of a District 3 2A Division 1 title with a 24-21 loss to Hawley in the regular season finale. And they were 4 points shy of knocking off number 6 ranked New Deal with a 28-24 loss in their area round playoff game. Forced and lost several veteran skill position players from that 2021 team, but it still has a strong foundation in place with four veteran linemen leading the way on both sides of the ball. I think we'll be pretty good this year, Buffalo senior defensive end, offensive tackle Nolan Parks said. Mostly the people around here in our community, they believe in us. It just led us wanting more after losing last year in the second round. The Buffaloes believe they can set the tone and bully opponents up front with a seasoned line group that includes Park, senior guard defensive end Catcher Dawson, senior offensive tackle defensive end Weston Thomas, and sophomore center nose guard Colden Averett. Outside of quarterback, if you're good up on both up front on both sides, you're going to win some football games, and we do have a lot of experience coming back and some JV kids that will be able to slide in there, Forsan head coach Jason Phillips said. That's going to be our strength, especially here early. We have a good group of skilled kids. Our job as coaches, we're trying to find who needs to be where to make us the best team that we can be. We've got some good options, but having all those guys up front back is really going to help. At the same time last year, the Buffaloes had so much senior experience that Phillips said the starting lineup was set only a week into 2 days. While Forsan has plenty of new faces that are skilled position starters, Phillips said the coaching staff is having fun instructing them because they are willing to learn and want to be coached. One critical position battle that is yet to be decided is quarterback, as the Buffaloes are replacing three-year starters Major Stockton, who rushed for 926 yards and 17 touchdowns last year, said, and Sawyer Stallings. Senior Cade Wallace, junior Brooks Wright, and sophomore Houston Stockton are all vying to be starting quarterback. Phillips calls all three good options, as Willis brings the most experience after serving as JV quarterback as a freshman and a sophomore, while Wright was the JV QB last year. Phillips calls Stockton a big, strong kid that can run. Our offense is fairly technical, Phillips said. There's a lot of reads and a lot of calls that our quarterback has to make. You've got to be able to process a bunch of the stuff. We're kind of taking it slow right now. Last year, we were able to go fast just because we had so much experience at the skilled position. This year, we've kind of slowed it down a little bit. Kevin Kilgora, Grant Roman, and Stockton are expected to get the carries at running back, a key position that will rush behind a capable O-line that can open holes. Kilgora was productive when he played last year as the third running back, while Roman is a quick scat back type. As part of realignment, the Buffaloes will be moving into District 3-2A Division 1 with Anthony, Reagan County, Cristoval, Ozona, and Sonora. We had a really good group last year, Phillips said. We lost 14 seniors, but we've got a good group coming back. We lost two games last year, and they were by a combined 7 points. So we kind of feel like we had more to prove last year as good as we were playing. I think these kids are fired up. I think the ones that we've got coming back and even some of the younger kids that were on JV, they used last year's success and failures. They kind of used it as a fuel. I'm excited to see what we do this year. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Do mRNA vaccines alter DNA? Dear Dr. Roach, the idea that the COVID mRNA vaccines alter one's DNA persists. What are the facts on this? Answer. There is no evidence of a person's DNA being changed by the vaccine. If it were so easy to change DNA, many genetic diseases would have been cured long ago. Unfortunately, it's very hard to get our own cells to change their DNA, even when we try to insert the DNA into the cells with technology specifically designed to do so. By contrast, mRNA is rapidly broken down by the cell's processes. The mRNA from the vaccine is transcribed into protein, the spike protein, which will then be recognized as a foreign invader by the body's immune system, priming the immune system so it can rapidly respond should you ever get exposed to COVID-19. The vaccine mRNA is destroyed by enzymes in the cell, similar to how all the mRNA strands the cell makes on a daily basis are broken down and recycled. mRNA cannot enter the nucleus, so mRNA cannot interact with DNA. There is no mechanism by which mRNA can change DNA. If you are worried about DNA damage, which is wise, you should do everything you can to avoid COVID. Recent research shows that viruses like COVID-19 cause DNA damage, which could potentially lead to the development of chronic diseases, such as cancer, diabetes, and atherosclerosis, and neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's disease.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, August 4th. Elderly mom struggles to adjust to senior living. Dear Abby, my elderly mother spent her entire adult life spending her men's money, and now she has morphed into an entitled, self-absorbed, and vapid woman. She blew through her inheritance years ago with no regard for future needs. I have now moved her into senior housing near me. She wants to make friends, but the problem is that she thinks she's better than everyone. She criticizes people's dress and perceived social status. Although she looks like a frail old lady, she's in denial. She also has bouts of crying and irrational concerns and demands. Abby, my mother has a roof over her head she can afford, food, access to health care, and family nearby. She's just used to the constant go, go, go of her former country club life, which she never paid for. I'm recently retired, and her manipulations and the effect she could have on my marriage have me stressed out. Please advise. Signed, Stuck in the Muck. Dear Stuck, you are a caring if frustrated son. You mentioned that your mother has spent her entire adult life indulging herself and living the country club life. Change at any age can be difficult, but as people age, they can become less resilient, which is more of a challenge. I can understand why your mother might sometimes shed tears over her changed status and even be in denial about it. You didn't mention how much freedom she has now, but she may have too much idle time on her hands. If she can't find things in common with her neighbors, perhaps she could make friends volunteering for some of the charities or activities in the community. You would be doing her a favor to suggest it. However, if her crying spells increase, she might benefit from being screened for depression by a medical professional. Dear Abby, I have been in a mostly online relationship with a man for years. He is a musician, and we met after one of his shows. We live 1,000 miles apart, and since COVID shut the world down, we have seen each other only twice. We love each other very much and have developed our relationship via texting constantly. My problem is I'm not a wealthy woman, but I have been sending him more than $1,000 a month all this time so he can post his music on various websites. I'm not entirely comfortable with this. I have a strong aversion to being used, which is what it sometimes feels like. What do you think I should do? Signed, Out of Tune in Delaware. Dear Out of Tune, listen to your intuition. Tell the musician you love him very much, but you will have to stop sending him money because you can no longer afford it. It happens to be the truth. How he behaves in the months that follow your announcement will show if he is on the level or if you have been used.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.